Tuesday.
Are you awake?
I am warning you, there's a monster inside of me, and you don't want to wake him up.
This show's broken, has not even begun yet.
Good.
It's too early to be disappointed.
This show's unairable.
Let's just put on the best show we can.
That'll be mediocre at best.
Happy Tuesday, everybody.
TSN 1200.
All right, welcome back to it. Final hour of the show is underway. A little bit of news on Timmy Stützle. We'll play a little bit of sound here. Give credit to a podcast that had him on talking about his recovery from his hand injury. We'll get to that later this hour. But right now, it's our pleasure. Spoke to him a few months ago. And like I said, who keeps track of time these days, right? During COVID, it was a fantastic conversation. The last time we spoke to him, Simmer reached out again. Glad he did so. And Anson Carter is joining us right now on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Good morning, Anson. Thanks for coming on.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
We're not too bad. A little cold here, Ace, to be quite honest with you. But I got to ask you first, what has it been like life in Georgia? Forget about hockey, just COVID and election style.
You know, it's actually not been that bad, to be honest with you. I check with my mom and dad every single day, and they watch CNN and Fox News to get both sides of the story all the time. And they assume that it's hectic and it's crazy down here, but it really hasn't been that bad. I think it certainly helps. The weather's nice. So I think the weather always is the ultimate factor that keeps people, you know, on their toes.
And I got to ask that because we had Alan May on from Dallas. We've had people, or I've talked to people in Florida, Ace. Again, this is the thing that is kind of said. We think, at least in relation to CNN, that the sky is falling, and it's not that same feeling living daily in beautiful old Buckhead?
No, not at all. And this was traditionally a red state, as you both probably know, a Republican state, and just flipped this year. Or I believe it's going to flip this year if it's not been made official yet to a Democratic state. So, no, the sky isn't falling down here. People are being responsible. At first, I was a little scared and nervous, only because we're the first state to open back up again. But everyone's been wearing their masks. We socially distance when we have to. We do a lot of things outdoors when we're allowed to. You know, lucky for us, the weather's nice, you know, so that certainly helps. But I think people have been pretty... They've had their wits about them, and they've kept their heads in their shoulders, and they're not buying into all the media hype, and that's the most important thing.
Okay, I've got to ask you just the open-ender here, Anson. You know, you cover the league for NBC Sports, and the simple question is, Anson, what are you hearing this week? Are we going to get any tangible news on a return to play this week, do you think?
You know, I'm hearing exactly what you guys are hearing. I mean, I have those same conversations with the commissioner and the deputy commissioner and people around the league all the time. But I really don't buy too much into them. I haven't really followed that closely. I leave that to the insiders. You know, like, even though I guess technically I am an insider, it just changes every single day. I know there's a commitment from everyone that wants to play the game of hockey, but there's so many factors involved that my job isn't really to get it first. My job is to get it right. So I'm just going to wait until the news comes out, like both of you guys. And then when it does come out, then I'll be up to comment on it. Because if not, it'll be like trying to cover the elections. You know, it changes every single day.
Yeah, no, and you're right. And we've kind of went through it. And I look at this, hey, you've got both sides trying to work together, Ace. I don't see any circumstance where you come back without fans. Owners are going to make any money. So at the end of the day for the National Hockey League, is it just important to put on some type of season, regardless of the amount of games, and at least have some forward progress to what you hope is better times?
It is, because you want to, well, the players want to play because you want to get some money in your pocket. I was part of the league when we were locked out for a full season, and that's money that you're not going to get back, ever. So I put my player hat on, and I think I want to get something. I don't care what that number is. I want to make something, earn a living. That's what you do. You've got a short shelf life as an NHL player, so you want to play as many games as you can, regardless of whatever the situation is, and you're fortunate to at least try to play some games and get some games in. It won't be perfect. It won't be ideal, but that's 2020 for you. And then I throw my owner team management hat on. I'm going to want my players to play too, because you have obligations you have to fulfill with sponsors, and TV and media rights. So I think both groups have, I guess, priorities in place that you want to see both groups come to the table and play the game. And the most important thing is the fans, too. I think fans want to see NHL hockey, whether there's fans in the stands or not, because ultimately we want to make sure that everybody's safe at the end of the day.
I think anybody listening can relate in this sense that has a job, right? And let's say you've come to an agreement, like you came to an agreement months ago on return to play and the six-year CBA extension. It's like, okay, good. We're good. We got a plan forward. And now players feel like, why are the owners coming back again? And that's fine. And you talked about getting your money. A lot of it has come down to maybe some more deferred money. So players can still get it eventually, Anson, but I can understand why they're ticked right now. Do you think it's kind of a cooling off period before, you know, they can get back and maybe get to some sort of an agreement?
Yeah, I think so. I really think so. You know, the last couple of years, you've seen a lot of, I guess, I don't know if it's, you know, the buddy system. I don't know the right word I'm looking for, and you'd think I would never be a shortage of words because I'm in the media business, but the league and the PA have gotten along really well the last couple of years. And Simmer, you know, being around the league for so long, that always hasn't been the case. But there's been labor peace amongst Don Fear and Gary Bettman, and I think there's a trust and respect between both men that they're going to get it done. But I understand how players would be frustrated. You know, you have a deal in place, and then, you know commissioner comes back and says, hey, guys, let's rip that original deal up. Let's try to redo this deal. But once again, it's 2020. So there's nothing that you could fall back on and say, well, this is how we do business in a normal year. This isn't a normal year. So there might have been projected losses, but no one could have projected how bad they could have been. So I see where, like I said, once again, I'm a fence sitter. I'm usually not, but I totally see where both sides are coming from in this negotiation.
Yeah, I look at the deal, Anson, as being fair, and I also have said if this is a Bob Goodenhour, forget it. Also on a scale, and people know the name, has Matthew Schneider played a pretty big role in that? Because as you say, we really don't hear from Donald Fear, and suddenly these deals get done quietly. And like you said, there is a real partnership right now between the PA and the NHL.
Absolutely. You know, Schneider's involved. Everyone's involved. Don Fear is all hands on deck. You know, this isn't his first rodeo. He's been around for a long time. He helped build that very powerful Major League Baseball union, which probably is the strongest union in professional sports. And his style is to be in the background. I'll give you guys an example. When I put together my video for back in June, I believe it was, when the deaths went down in Minnesota and Minneapolis, and I reached out to Don Fear. And at first, he was like, you know what, I'm not sure if I could be a part of this video. I need to talk to my constituents first. I need to talk to my players. But he didn't really understand what I was asking him to do, if he wanted to participate. So he thought about it, and then he came back to me after like maybe 30 seconds. He said, okay, Anson, I'll do it. And I was shocked that he hesitated, but I knew that being around Major League Baseball and being around players of color his whole professional career, that Don Fear's going to do the right thing. And the George Floyd murder was a huge change, I think, in our society. But it's just an example of saying to me that he was thinking about his players first. He didn't want to put his name and his face out there in a video without going back and talking to his players. And that spoke volumes to who Don Fear is as a leader of the Players Association.
And Anson, that's around the same time when you joined us here on the station, and you know what happened subsequently with Blake as well, what the NBA did, what the NHL did, and here we are months later. Do you feel that, you know, enough progress has been made? Because I think I've read that some, you know, that have been stakeholders in this big time have felt that maybe there's been a little more lip service. We've seen like Evander Kane and that unit kind of pulling back from the NHL, which came out of everything months ago. How do you feel how it's come along in recent months?
I think it's been fabulous. You know, I'll never listen to anything that those guys are saying. I'm not part of that organization, so I'm not going to disparage them. I'm not going to comment on them, because you can't comment on what you don't know, right? So it's easy to be on the outside and say, this isn't happening. I can tell you what, I'm the co-chair of the Players Inclusion Council, or committee, excuse me, with PK Subban, and we have some wonderful people. I mean, I know with this radio, we got tons of time, so I'll just give you a list of all the people we have on our Players Inclusion committee. You've got Kevin Shattenkirk, Blake Bolden, Mika Zibanejad, Bridget Laquette, Jamal Mayers, Kevin Weeks, Megan Duggan, Julie Chu, Al Montoya, Scotty Gomez, Sarah Nurse, Ryan Reeves, Jujar Kara, and Jacob Slavin. Those are individuals that are on our committee. And we have two-hour Zoom calls every other week. And that's just our committee. There's a fan inclusion committee. There's a youth inclusion committee. And this is all overseen by Executive Inclusion Council. And on that council is a man by the name of Vinny Viola. And you guys would know the Viola family owns the Florida Panthers. Well, Mr. Viola is the final person that says yes or no. He writes the checks in Florida. What do we see in Florida? Well, Brett Peterson was hired by Bill Zito. So when I hear people coming out saying nothing's happening, that's just lip service. That's just noise making. That's clicktivism. That's what that is. You know, because my first reaction, people start making noise like that, I want to say to you, okay, what are you doing? Tell me, what exactly are you doing? To be out there making noise, beating your chest like that. Yeah. So, yes, to answer your question, guys, sir, I'm a little long-winded.
That's good.
Oh, no, it's not, Anson, and I wish I could say some of the same things. I look at, and I don't even want to, because I don't want to have you on because you're of color, what I've seen in the league, and again, you look to Chris Stewart, look to Daly, look to anything that's happening. But the other neat part is, and seeing in the player development what happened with the Chicago Blackhawks yesterday, that crew that you identified yesterday, you know, it's not just about black. It's about Hispanic. It's about females. It's about including everybody versus one particular group.
That's what hockey is all about, being a part of the team. It's all about being a part of the team. Teamwork always makes a dream work. I've always believed that. And it's not just about, you know, black or African-American, African-Canadian, people of color. It's everybody's on these committees. We're all working together to make this thing work. You just can't have black players speaking out, trying to make it happen. Because forever, as a black player, I never want to stand out in the National Hockey League. I want to be a part of the team. That's what hockey, that's the fabric of hockey, being a part of the team, being one of 20, one of 22, not standing out. Your play might stand out, your personality might stand out, but as a person, as someone in the room, you want to just blend and be one of the guys. That's the best part about being a hockey player in the National Hockey League. And these committees reflect the communities that we want to represent. And that's what we want to embrace as part of hockey on a professional level and, more importantly, on an amateur level. Because you look at how hard it is to play in the National Hockey League. You've got a better chance of going business and go pro in business, than going pro as a hockey player. So why not make it more inclusive, teach these kids life lessons? The most important muscle that you learn when you play hockey is when you have to learn how to skate, you got to fall, you got to get up. And I tell my kids all the time, you fall, you can cry all you want, but make sure you get back up again. Well, you're not going to learn how to play the game of hockey without learning that. So these are all life lessons that we can learn from playing the game of hockey. So why not diversify it and let all kids and people learn these great traits that you can apply and carry with you for the rest of your life?
I'm glad I brought that up. I wasn't aware how involved Vinny Viola was behind that as well, and it makes a lot more sense what happened recently with a new hiring in Florida. Anson Carter is joining us here on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. So here's one thing, Anson, that we're all involved in, and that's COVID here. Unfortunate news coming out of Vegas. Looks like they got an outbreak with players there. They have to close the facility through Thanksgiving weekend, and we haven't even got to a training camp yet. Give us your thoughts on how the NHL is going to navigate through this, because it's a concern for us all and all sports leagues, and this is a big element as to maybe what's holding things up as well, how they're going to deal with COVID and get to next season.
Yeah, I don't think there's any misconception out there that COVID won't be a part of the conversation. It's how you deal with it. Because I don't think it would be realistic to think that you could go a full season. Like the bubble, I mean, that was amazing to not have one instance. So I think there would be a plan in place that if someone does come down with COVID, what's the protocol is going to be to make sure everyone else is being kept safe? And what is the plan in place to allow that player to re-enter the competition with his teammate safely after X amount of time? So I think those are the concerns that players would have. Those are the concerns I think ownership would have, too, to make sure that everybody's safe. I mean, at the end of the day, we all want to make money, but safety is the most important thing. I don't care how much money you make. I know some of the richest people in the world, but it hasn't stopped them from dying early. So safety is the most important thing. So I know we're having these conversations about return to play, but at the forefront of all these conversations with the league, with the players, I know they're thinking about everyone's safety first.
And I look at this, Hanson, and I hear the scenario, 48 games of an all-Canadian division against Ottawa, playing those teams, giving me all day long. Thoughts on, I guess, back to your Vancouver days, how much fun would it have been to play in an all-Canadian division?
Oh, that'd be amazing. Yeah, you know, a little news flash, and I've heard Berkey said it a few times there on Hockey Night in Canada that it's hard to get players to play in Canada, and it's true. I'm sorry, Canadian fans might not want to hear this, but I know when I played in the league, a lot of the game's biggest stars wanted no part of playing in Canada. And yes, taxes was a reason, but that's not the biggest reason. You're not thinking about taxes. You're playing the game. You're a lot of guys will play for free. So taxes aren't at the forefront of the conversation. A lot of guys don't want that pressure. And I look back at my career, I should have played in Canada longer. I mean, due to the economics of my situation all the time, that wasn't the case. But I love that pressure. There was no off days. You know, guys get called up from the AHL, and the fans would know exactly who those players are. I would change tape my stick a certain way in practice, and I got 10 guys asking about it in the media scrum. You know, I love that pressure, that rush of being in the spotlight 24/7. A lot of guys aren't built for that.
Yeah.
Some guys like being in Columbus, where the pressure is none, in Tampa Bay, where the pressure isn't on you, in Florida, in Nashville, even though those are great hockey markets, Tampa and Nashville, it isn't the same as playing in, say, Ottawa when you go two games without scoring a goal. And they're asking Thomas Chabot, hey, what's going on? This is two games, you know, out of 82 games. Why haven't you scored yet? And it's unfortunate that we might come back without fans for an all-Canadian division, because for Ottawa Senators fans there and for you guys there, it would be a treat, because I know they've been struggling in attendance the last couple of years. I'm sure that might change or would have changed if we would have had fans attending games this season to start.
And you bring up a great point. It makes me laugh about our World Junior team and whether the kids are under too much pressure. And should you notify them by email that they're cut, or what should you end up doing? Can you, and I guess from an NFL, and I'll say the NBA doesn't seem quite the same, but from a football standpoint, in the state of Georgia, what is it like to play college football? And what could be anything better than preparing you to play in the National Football League?
It's insane. I mean, this is SEC country down here. So this is Georgia. This is Alabama. This is Auburn, Mississippi State. College sports is like playing professional sports. That's the one thing a lot of Canadians don't realize. Whether it's college hockey, you know, whether it's college baseball, basketball, football, it's like professional sports where you eat, sleep, train to prepare for your competition. But it's very, very similar. It really is. And that pressure, you know, you mentioned World Juniors. I came from the college hockey system, and I would watch World Juniors every single year. I remember watching the Russians play with Fedorov and Bure and McGillney back in the day in Alaska, I believe it was. I remember watching Dougie Waite and Eric Lindros go head-to-head. You hear Bob McKenzie coming out with the stories every single year. Like, that's some of the things I look forward to as a kid, and then you get away from it playing college hockey. And I remember being part of selection camp, and I remember people like, who the hell is this guy? Who's Anson Carter? And they probably looked down and saw the 10th round draft of the Quebec. They're like, who is this guy? What's he doing in here? But the pressure was unbelievable, but it helps make you stronger. It really does. And now as I get older now, it's tough for me to watch the cameras at kids and kids' faces after they get cut, you know, at like, say, 5 o'clock in the morning, because that was the worst sleep I ever had that camp. Because you knew that knock could be coming. And I never slept that whole night because I'm thinking potentially that could be the time I go back to campus. And I didn't want to go back to campus. I wanted to put on that red and white jersey and represent Canada. And luckily that I did, because we had the opportunity to do something that a lot of kids don't get a chance to do, and that's win a gold medal for Team Canada.
I'm so glad a few years ago they got away with that knock on the door on live TV, basically, and they let it breathe a little bit before they break the news to these kids when their heart's broken when they don't get a chance to make that team. I just want to go back to something because of where you are, and Simmer brought it up here, and just, you know, college football, when you talk about the pressure environment, I think playing, you know, Division I college football in the United States is pretty much the only team sport I can think of. Sometimes, depending on what program you're at and how big your stadium is, it's a step down to go pro in terms of focus, even, right? like it is. Like, you go to the big house and get 100,000 people in there, and then let's say you go to Jacksonville next. That's a step down in pressure, really, right? You want to talk about getting prepared.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You're speaking the wrong guy. You can't bring up the big house.
I know. I'm sorry, Spartan. Okay. Man, did I step in it.
We don't talk like University of Michigan. We don't have those things on. See, really for that kind of stuff, guys.
I'm sorry. Oh, no.
We had 80,000 strong. And that brings me back to a thought where, these outdoor games are so huge to the NHL's business, and fans love them. Well, outdoor games, really, besides, I believe it was 91, when they went outdoors in Vegas, maybe my timing's wrong, when Gretzky and the Kings went outside.
They played the Rangers,
The Rangers. Well, Michigan State, Michigan. That was really the game that opened people's eyes at Spartan Stadium. People were like, wow, this could really work. I got to take my hockey helmet to the late, great Coach Ron Mason at Michigan State. Like, I just left before that happened. But he really put that in motion, and that was really an eye-opener for the NHL and the rest of the hockey world to see that, hey, maybe this outdoor thing could really work. And over 80,000 fans packed Spartan Stadium to watch some great outdoor hockey between Michigan State and University of Michigan.
Nobody loved Ron more than Ron. I was sitting in a meeting with him and George McPhee, and he'd coached George at Bowling Green, and he started talking about if he walked around Detroit that more people would recognize him than Scotty Bowman. And I was trying to look at George as to whether or not he was joking or not. And then we walked out and got a good chuckle about it.
Coach Mason wasn't joking, though. He was correct.
He was. You're right.
He was a legend there.
Yeah, no. Hey, you had the Michigan coach as well for a long time. Thoughts on the offseason for the Ottawa Senators on Murray, Dadonov, and the young core coming through here, which I know you know quite well.
Yeah, I think Matt Murray's the X factor. He's such a good kid, and he's won cups already. That's an experience that you could bring to the table that not many goalies in National Hockey could do. And yes, he's had a couple of down years. He's had some tough luck the last couple of years on and off the ice. But listen, he's still a hell of a goaltender. And when he finds his game, and I don't think it's a question of if, I think he's going to. I know he's going to. It's going to be a nice security blanket for that young Senators team, young players to go out there and just play their game. I go back to when I was in Boston. I got traded there late in 96, I believe it was, or 97. And they're tanking. We got Joe Thornton and Sergei Samsonov. And once we got Byron Defoe in net for us, that really stabilized that position. And we could go out there and play our game. But you see the toughness they're surrounding them with a guy like DeBranson, Austin Watson. That's going to give those young players some flexibility and some freedom to go out there and do what they have to do and play and not worry about guys taking runs at them. Make sure that Brady Tkachuk's not out there, fighting everyone. He could go out there and play his game and establish his physical presence without having to drop the gloves and injure himself. So I like what Ottawa's doing there. It's not just about the young kids, but it's about having the veteran presence around them, because you don't want to just give young kids jobs. That's not what the NHL is all about. I know teams like to develop their players in the NHL now because of the salary cap, but I think from the standpoint of team building, you want these young players to earn their jobs, because they're going to feel that they've really connected the team, and now they're not going to be spoiled brats skating around thinking they deserve this. They're going to believe they earned it, and I think it'll make them better pros because of that.
All right, Anson, I could have used so many other examples to make my pressure point, and I picked I'm not going to say the stadium again. I'll go to the penalty box on that one. You know what? We're so comfortable speaking to you. I just had a brain fart. Please forgive me, Spartan. Please forgive me.
It's early. It's early, so I'll let you off the hook today. Don't let it happen again.
Thanks a lot for joining us. That was fun.
Of course. Anytime, guys.
All right. There's Anson Carter. Oh, man. Oh, that's awful. Why don't I get Terry O'Reilly on, and we'll talk about Larry Robinson and the Habs next. Okay. All right. We're back.
And you don't know what's funny about that. I had a kid by the name of Matty Herr. Matty played.
I remember that name.
Well, Matty, drafted in MLB too, but he would have a Michigan golf bag when he turned pro. Like, he would not, all he would talk about is Wolverines hockey. He was like, please stop it. And I think we had Ace at the same time. What I also did, and again, very careful weighing through this, when that whole the Alliance group had asked for this incredible ask from the National Hockey League, Lloydie, I looked at that and thought, okay, what does this mean? Where does this go? Some people are saying, well, on an annual basis, it's only $333,000 a team. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And then when you understand with Anson at times why he's been quiet, and boy, it's, like I said, just really refreshing to hear that from him.
Always good stuff. Hammer will have that up on the website in a little while as well at tsn1200.ca. We'll take a break. Listen, we'll get that little bit of sound here. Give credit to a Sens podcast. They had Timmy Stutzel on and a little bit of an update. How he's feeling coming off the hand injury. We'll hit on that next on TSN Mornings on TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
Where did the time go? Well, just a great conversation with Anson Carter. I told you Hammer wouldn't waste his time. It's already up. Hit our website at tsn1200.ca. You can check that out or anything you've missed here in the radio station and take part in our web poll question of the day, as always, and brought to you by the Tool and Equipment Store as well. All right, I teased this just before we brought Anson on. There's a little bit of a Timmy Stutzla update, and it's a positive update. Got to give credit where credit is due. Timmy Stutzla was a guest on the Locked On Senators podcast. You can find it on Twitter at Sens Central. So a hat tip there for getting Timmy Stutzla on and the reason why we can use a little bit of the audio. So here it is. Sens draft pick, Timmy Stutzla, recovering from that hand injury. This is how he's feeling.
So the rehab is going very good. I had a meeting with the doctor yesterday and he says I'm doing very, very good and the hand is getting better. And yeah, hopefully I can join the team practice in maybe 1.5 weeks already. So that's great. And I think there's no way that I can't play the World Juniors.
All right. So there you go. I'm playing the World Juniors, baby.
Yeah.
He's excited. And some good news on the progress there. Just once again, I'll give credit. That's at Sens Central.
Yeah.
They've got the entire podcast interview with him there, but could get there.
Yeah, and that's what broken hands do. They actually get better. They don't get chopped off. Yeah, no, I know. And I know that's been reported.
They'll grow back, right?
Well, no. And for young men, that's what happens. They do heal. He had gone back skating last week, excited, as you said, for the World Junior, and fortunate for the timing, Lloydie. Talking to Todd Lushko, doing lots of off-ice work, now back on the ice. And as you know, with the injury, a little bit of a brace. And the trick here is, hey, first of all, as you get into practice, because it was basically an incident, just running into another teammate, at what point is he comfortable to take any contact, even if it's incidental, get him to that spot? And also for Germany and the World Junior here, they could have, and certainly that top line could be pretty good. And obviously for Sens fans, depending what happens with the National Hockey League, I think just really excited to see him play, where last year you kept little clips of it. All eyes will be focused in on him, Mr. Sanderson. So also in those interviews, just like when we had him on in the summertime, Lloydie, just always that real good energy, right? And I think based on everything that he's done, including that very heartfelt shout out to Alex Trebek on his social media, just a really, really classy young man.
Is he the prospect that you're most eager to see? Or you mentioned Jake Sanderson. You wonder about how, will he look dominant playing for the Americans?
Yeah, I got to be honest with you, Lloydie. I'm not familiar with either of them enough that I'll say 1A and 1B, or I'll say equal. For a World Junior, that should be pretty good here. And what you also want to see them against the better teams. So if they're playing against, in the case of Germany, against Canada, or, they should end up getting to the quarterfinal for the team that they end up having. I'll say both. I just think it's going to be really neat. And I guess the difference is with Sanderson, I guess I'm more cautious because I'm just wondering how everybody's going to react. Where right now, I think everybody's pretty much in love with Stutzla. The only comparison he'll probably have for the Sens fan base or anybody else is the minute anybody watches Mr. Byfield, right? That's going to be the comparison part of it. But, hey, all these kids, they all look like good players. I hope Jack Quinn ends up making it. Excited to see him. Excited to see the young goaltenders. But both of those guys. And I from a Sens perspective, because we covered all these kids, even Järvente for the year that he's having in Finland.
Yeah.
Like to see him against his peer group, because what he's doing, the team that he plays on is first place in the league, in the Finnish league, Tampere, to put up those numbers, Lloydie, that's pretty, well, it's very good for a teenager at that level. So I want to see what he's all about as well.
And also he's a true 18-year-old. He just turned 18 in August and ready to go and playing that in the Finnish league. All right.
Yeah.
Just a few minutes left in the show. Let's do a little of this day in history, Simmer. Squeeze a bit in here. Always fun. Got some Grey Cup notes here. It's that time of year. I saw all kinds of Grey Cups have been handed out over the years on this day, so I've just picked two here. The Ottawa Rough Riders, Grey Cup, Farcity Stadium in Toronto, back in 1951, claimed their fourth championship, a 21-14 win over the Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
Yeah, it must have been interesting at that time. First of all, think about post-World War II. Also think about the wages in the CFL, and that was the premier football league on the planet, was it not, Lloydie? I mean, you could argue some of the college ball, but the NFL certainly, or the AFL, didn't have itself together, and that continued to trend into the 60s and 70s, where lots of guys were coming north to make more cash than they could south of the border.
Absolutely. You know, the NFL phenomenon is relatively recent when you talk about how long the CFL's been around. Oftentimes, if you wanted to play pro, you're an American, you came to the CFL.
Well, and it was even interesting as far back, what we do talk the other day about Rocket Ishmael. Is that late 80s?
Stop it right there.
What?
You did it perfectly. Didn't even mean to.
Why?
On this day in 1991, Winnipeg, Argonauts defeat the Stampeders 36-21. Argos under new ownership of Bruce McNall and Wayne Gretzky and John Candy. Yeah. And the Rocket, with that return, somebody throws a beer. Remember that? And it hits the turf behind him. And it was just, it was so cold. There was ice on like the 5-yard line. But there you go. Oh, look at you. You're just on your game.
No,
you didn't even mean to do that.
Well, and another documentary you can watch. And it was really astonishing at that time how the slotting in the NFL, the money that he was paid to come here, I think it was, what, 5 times in a signing bonus? Low salary. Now, you confuse me, which does, it's easy to happen. We were talking last week. Was it his birthday or was it his brother's birthday? It was Rocket, right?
It was his birthday.
Okay, and the other brother was nicknamed the Missile, was he not?
Correct.
Okay.
Kadri.
Kadri, exactly. And he played at Syracuse. Okay, just wanted to clarify that. Okay.
Okay, and my stupid little personal story, I saw him get the game-winning touchdown on a pass from Warren Moon.
Nice.
As the Vikings beat Jim Everett, the Saints, way
and
back
now,
in the day.
And we are talking the Missile now. Not the Rocket.
That was the Missile.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
At the old Metrodome, which is now they blew it up years ago. All right. There you go. Couple of CFL notes on this day here. How about this one? Like when you talk about all-time great running backs, Jim Brown's name always comes up. 1957 set the club record 237 yards rushing in a game.
Yeah, and for people that have no idea who he is, more familiar with him and Conan the Barbarian, right?
Well, and acting, various roles here. It's true, right? Yeah. Conan the Barbarian.
And by a
lot
Mars
of attacks.
And by a lot of accounts, not the friendliest fella, eh?
Never really liked the limelight except when he was acting, it seemed, way. On this day, hey, listen, you got a strong Baltimore connection, right, that over the years?
Yeah.
1982, Cal Ripken was named Rookie of the Year. And that started the run when he was rookie, where he set the Ironman record, which, listen, especially the way baseball is these days, we'll never see that again.
Yeah,
never.
And at the time, Dad was on the staff. I don't know if Earl Weaver would have been the manager then, right?
Yeah, he was still there.
Billy at some point came on to it. And anybody, just if you had a chance to order something for Christmas, a real good book to read about fundamentals and kind of Anson was talking about what you learn in sports. There was a really good book written by Cal Sr., called The Ripken Way, and it just really kind of about raising kids and a lot of the fundamentals that they instilled with the children at that time.
Speaking of books and setting records, Wilt Chamberlain, 55 rebounds. It was an NBA record in 1960, and he set some more records that he revealed in his book years later.
Yeah, I tried to do the calculation on that, and I just don't know how it's feasible. But hey, if Wilt, and I guess that is that the reason why you're called the Stilt?
I don't know. Okay.
And also, he is, and I think when you go to the Hershey Arena, I hope I can have the right player. Is he the only player to score 100 points in NBA history?
He is.
Yeah,
he
and
is,
that's it. And it was the game was played in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Oh, there you go.
At the old building. Yeah, there's a big thing up there, and it has, at least I think that was how many points he scored. So,
another all-time great on the court. Happy birthday. Well, we're born on this day at least. In 1938, Oscar Robertson, the Big O, Olympic gold medal in 1960, Cincinnati, Milwaukee, born on this day in Charlotte, Tennessee in 1938.
Yeah, they always talk about what a superstar, right? And and did you say Knicks? Was he on the Knicks team in 70 that won the world championship, last one that won?
What I got here, where was his travels? I remember mostly with Milwaukee.
Okay, okay.
It also says Cincinnati here as well.
Okay, okay. Right. So forget that.
1940, Paul Tagliabue born on this day. Would you rather have Roger Goodell or Paul Tagliabue as commissioner?
Yeah, I'll actually go back to Pete Rozelle. But I don't honestly, as far as the commissioners, the baseball commissioner is completely out to lunch. I understand Roger Goodell's. I don't have a problem with Goodell, Bettman, or Adam Silver, to be quite honest with you. So now would I like to have his job and his paycheck? For sure. But I'll go with Roger Goodell.
My favorite NFL player of all time, 1996, Barry Sanders set an NFL record when he recorded his eighth straight 1,000-yard season. Now, think about the time of year here.
Yeah.
He had 1,000 yards on this day in 1996. And, yeah, listen, retired too young because he was sick of losing.
Yeah, only thing that would have helped him is they played in a dome, so that probably weather-wise would not have been affected too much. And you're right, retired. He is now on, he's on the commercials, right, on the National Football League? We had not seen him forever until they named the 100th anniversary team. He's suddenly on the field. I mean, it was just like out of sight, out of mind, and now back at least a little bit into the mainstream.
Absolutely electric, the cuts he would make.
Yeah, and they always said Redskins 92. Talking to the guys, Lloydie, a little insider information. They said the only difference with him, and not that he wasn't a great player, but they were playing Detroit, I think, in the conference final, go to the Super Bowl that year. If you get him on grass, his ability to get to the outside edge, there you go, breaking her down. A little bit more difficult to cut on the grass than it was on the turf, and especially in November at RFK.
Little game plan. How do you stop Barry from John Simpson here? How about a hockey birthday to end?
Okay.
Happy birthday to Keith Primo, as born on this day in Toronto in 1971. Unfortunately, part of his story is concussions. We wrote a book about it here, but what are your memories of Keith Primo?
Well, brother Wayne and one of my, right away in the
fight?
OHL. Which fight?
With Wayne. Remember that when they fought each other and the parents were none too happy?
No, I didn't. Now, of course, his son is now in the system with Montreal as a goaltender.
Kay.
But he was playing for Bill LaForge and the Hamilton Steelhawks.
Oh,
and
man.
They just opened up the
Cup. There's
cups,
some stories there.
Oh, and Yorkie has them. And, and first of all, you wouldn't believe them now, and chances are Bill LaForge would be arrested if the majority of this happened. But
100%.
The thing I remember with Keith is that when he came in, he wasn't overly physical, but he's just a monster of a man. Like, he would have been kind of the equation of a modern-day Peter Mihaljevic. Like, when he skated around, like, he was just a big boy and certainly a real talented junior and still went on to have a nice career for himself.
Part of that great top five in the 90 draft where Jagr went fifth.
Nolan ended
up going first, and Ricci and Primo, Nedved involved in that top five there as well. I remember him fighting Bob Probert. Was he a rookie or maybe a sophomore in practice? That video, yikes!
Yeah, and he was a Detroit pick, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's always a great story. And the late great Nick Pilano, who finished off with Ottawa as a scout, he went over to the World Championships that year, and he called Jimmy Devlano. He said, "Jimmy, I got to tell you, there's this Czech player over here, Jagr. We got to take him." And Jimmy says, "Nick, I'm telling you, we've had so much problems with Klima. We're not taking any more European players. You go have a nice dinner tonight, and we'll be fine." That was one of the reasons, and I say that too. They just were like, "Hey, this stuff with the Europeans and Klima and some of the other players at the time, way too much work, and steer clear of Jagr."
You imagine adding Jagr, Fedorov, and oh my goodness. Yeah. All right, and hey, apologies to Tucker if you're listening. That's the other Keith Primo memory.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
With that ending that marathon game with a great move and a great shot.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. That'll do it for today. Meth's tomorrow, correct? Mark Mathot.
He is 9:10.
9:10 tomorrow. Daddy daycare. When you get him rolling on that, we'll it'll be fun.
Oh, for sure.
It always is.
Yeah.
Thank you, Simmer. That
Have
was fun
a great
today.
Day, for
Good
sure.
Stuff.
Cheers, brother.
You too. And saying the Mad Hammer, and we're back at it tomorrow. Coming up next, it is In the Box right here on TSN 1200.
Time has expired. There's the Hooter.
Let's go to eat a damn snack.
Suck it, Finelle.